Whether you're starting out, settling into, or scaling up your freelance business, navigating the ever-changing marketplace can be challenging. That's why the Freelance Heroes Portal is the best place for you. On top of the essential practical support and resources available, the Freelance Heroes community provides moral support too, to help you go it alone without feeling alone. We like to think of the community as virtual business sidekicks, always there when you need them. For greater presence and support to help your freelance business grow, join Freelance Heroes. And right now, you can also try out our Gold membership for 1 month for free. Sign up today at freelance-heroes.com.
Hello and welcome to the Freelance Heroes podcast. Ed Goodman here. Thank you so much once again for joining me. How are you doing? How's your business going in 2021? I do love reading your stories, so do please email me podcast@freelance-heroes.com. Today or this week or in this episode, I am going to be talking to Anna Cadrea-Rado. Now, you may have signed up to Anna's newsletter, which has charted her freelancing journey since she started freelancing back in 2017. You may have listened to her Is This Working podcast. Well, from tomorrow, or out now, depending on when you're listening to this, you can now read her story and more in her new book, You're the Business, How to Build a Successful Career When You Strike Out Alone. It's like a mixture between encyclopedic knowledge of what you should do to start and grow your freelance business, interspersed with her experiences, her stories. It really is a fascinating, all-encompassing book. Well, as I say, this week I had the opportunity to talk to Anna about why she wrote the book, what she learnt about freelancing during the book and herself, how her freelancing journey has affected Anna as well, and what's her feelings for the freelance economy in the future. So much to chat about. I think you're really going to enjoy this. So please enjoy my chat with Anna Cadrea-Rado. Anna, it is a delight to finally meet you. How are you doing?
I'm brilliant, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you so much for giving up your time. What must be a very busy time for you anyway, just because of who you are and what you do, and you have so much going on, but of also because of your book, which, depending on when a listener is listening to this, it could either be the day before it's published or it's out now, in which case, pause this podcast, go and buy the book, and then come back. It's all right. Anna and I will wait. It's fine. It's such a great book. I mean, an obvious question to start with. You must be really, really proud of how it's come out, especially to write it during what has been such a challenging year.
Yeah, definitely. So this is my first ever book. And as a writer and journalist, you do kind of hope and want to write a book at some point in your career. So I am incredibly proud of that. It was my pandemic project. I think I even actually got the book deal at the beginning of the first lockdown, and then I've been pretty much writing it throughout this last year. Finished it kind of just towards the end of 2020. So yeah, it's a big achievement and one that I'm really proud of, and also feel very grateful that I had this to kind of work on during that time, because I was able to sort of go into my writing cave and just get on with it and just have that one big project, which obviously as a freelancer, being able just to have one project to work on for such a long period of time is also such a blessing in and of itself. So yeah, very happy.
There must be a challenge, though, when you write a book during such a year. And I don't want to talk about this year or over talk about this year, but there must be a real challenge to not be too influenced by so much of the negativity that happens within not just the world, but within the self-employment community too. How did you ensure that you kept on track?
Well, to a large extent, when you are so there's kind of a couple of phases with the book writing. There is obviously the research phase to begin with. And also when you actually pitch a book, you already have the structure set out. So I already had the structure and the chapter outlines were already done before I pitched it, which was essentially written before the pandemic happened. So that the bones of the book and the idea for the book was all conceived of pre-pandemic. And then, of course, things kind of, I did have to adapt some things and include a bit of mention at various points. But to a large extent, the writing process is very insular and quite solitary. So I was actually able to kind of block quite a lot of stuff out. It did feel very much, the writing process very much was a Groundhog Day within Groundhog Day, because when you're writing a book, you're waking up every morning and you're just getting on with the writing process. And I'm quite a structured person, and I think most authors will tell you that you do need some degree of structure in order to actually get all of those words on the page. So I had my writing routine, and it was very formulaic. And obviously we were already living in Groundhog Day anyway. But actually the actual process of writing it, I did actually feel like I was able to block quite a lot of things out. You know, I had all these blockers on my social media. I was trying to avoid the news to a large extent. So it was only kind of once the book was finished, and now I'm in the sort of the talking about it stage, I feel like I've emerged into a world of, oh God, everything is quite bad at the moment. And also just when you're in the middle of such a big project like that, you're very just focused on getting it done. So it's a lot easier to just kind of stay motivated and to stay focused. I would definitely say that I'm finding motivation and staying focused so much harder now that it's actually written than when I was actually in the midst of the actual process of doing it.
Can you not apply some of the structure to your everyday life as well? By the way, you chose a hell of a year to stay off the news, I have to say.
I know.
Before we go on about the book, for anyone who strangely may not have come across you before, can I just ask you just to introduce who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I am, I'm a journalist first and foremost. I've been working as a journalist for over 10 years, and I went freelance in 2017 as the result of a redundancy. So I was working in-house at a media organization, and along with quite a few other people, actually, I lost my job and I decided to go freelance. So I started freelancing my main thing is journalism. So I write a lot I write about business, culture and technology for all sorts of publications, including the New York Times, The Guardian, Wired, places like that. But I also, which is probably what most freelancers know me for, I write a weekly newsletter about freelancing. It's called Lance. It was formerly The Professional Freelancer. I recently changed the name. And that has been my staple throughout my entire freelance journey. It's very much the birthplace of the book. So that very first week when I went freelance, when I started working for myself, I started writing a newsletter. I didn't really have a plan for it. I just wanted to have a creative project that was my own, to take back a bit of control, given the fact that I'd just experienced a redundancy and I didn't really know what was going to happen, how the freelancing thing was going to work out for me. So I started writing this newsletter, and it very quickly became a chronicle of my journey as a freelancer. Back then, there weren't that many resources, or at least I couldn't really find that many resources about freelancing. I think in the last year, there's been a real kind of explosion in that world. So now there are so many places you can turn to for those sorts of resources. But I was just basically writing kind of like about the highs and lows of freelancing, and that just grew a readership, and quite a big readership. And that is really where the idea for the book came from, because I kind of thought, this is great having this, being able to document my journey as a freelancer, but really to put all of that kind of everything that I'm learning about freelancing, a book format just felt like the most logical place to put it all together. So that's kind of a bit of my history, and kind of also a bit of a history of the book. But then I also do also like so many creatives and so many journalists, I wear many hats and I do lots of different projects. So I also have my own podcast. It's called Is This Working? And that's about work more broadly. We talk a lot about freelancing, but that's it's about modern work essentially, and the messy parts of work. And I also I also campaign for freelance workers' rights because one thing that I very quickly realized when I started working for myself was how difficult it is to get paid. So that kind of championing freelancers is also a very key part of my work and what I kind of try to bring. It's why there's so much in the book about, you know, how to, you know, knowing your rights and how to get paid and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, there's two specific things I quite like about this book. I mean, apart from the entire content, but I mean, it's like two books in one, because in one part, it's very much your journey. And in another part, it's the most incredible checklist that covers emotion, practicality, taxation. And the other thing I like, which I think most authors tend to avoid, do you introduce the introduction that you've just given us so brilliantly now? And I want to come back to that. But then you jump straight into the deep end of finances. And I can't help but feel that most authors that write these kind of books will go, oh, I want them to carry on reading the book. There's a danger they might not go any further. But you're very much kind of, you can't mess with this stuff, so here are your options. What made you kind of put that so early into the book?
I think because it's for my journey as a freelancer, money became a problem very, very quickly. And not so much my fear was that I wouldn't find any clients and I wouldn't get work and I just wouldn't make money. That has not been my problem. My problem has been getting paid on time, knowing how to ask for money, the mechanics of payment. And I know it's not just me. I know that this is, and it's not just me. It's not just freelance journalists. It's all journalists. It's all small business owners. It's all people who work for themselves. This is the thing they struggle with the most. And it's the thing that's just not talked about. And I just feel very strongly that money does not have to be a taboo subject. And I think that it's such a core part of working for yourself. You cannot avoid talking and thinking about money. If you work in-house, you know, you negotiate a salary when you start your job, maybe you negotiate it once a year, if that, but when you work for yourself, you're constantly talking, constantly thinking about money. And so there was no way I could avoid talking about it. And I also really wanted to, because I know from my own experience that anytime I've been part of very open and honest conversations about money within the freelance space, it has helped me so much. I'm in a WhatsApp group with, they're actually not just freelancers, it's people from all kinds of professional backgrounds. But the point of the WhatsApp group, the theme of the WhatsApp group is to talk about getting paid. And it's primarily around people who do professional speaking or who are asked to speak by brands. And the conversation always is, this brand has come to me and they've asked me to work for free or for some really low rate. And then there is just a flood of advice from the other people in the group, just boosting them and helping them ask for more money. And it's been amazing. I mean, my phone has been going off all morning because someone was asked to do something for free. And after kind of heeding this advice, they ended up getting paid something like that, you know, in the thousands of pounds. And you really see the power of being open and transparent around money. That was such an important thing for me to have in the book. And also I really firmly believe this, that there is enough for everyone. Me talking about how much I earn, my rates, my clients, sharing that kind of information does not mean it's going to get taken away from me. It just means that more people will have access to that as well. And it's not a, you know, there's no kind of cap. There's no sort of, there isn't scarcity around this, which is something that I think historically it's very easy to think that. And then given everything that's going on at the moment, all of those feelings have been amplified. So I think these conversations are more important now than ever.
I mean, it's not the only taboo subject you talk. I'm almost jumping the gun here a bit, but you talk about actually it's okay to leave the freelancing career and go back into self-employment if you need be. And I don't know anyone who's talked about that without initially considering themselves having failed at their freelancing career. But again, you head it off beautifully and you use some wonderful references from TED Talks and other books. I mean, can you see yourself at some point going back into full-time employment or I mean, obviously never say never, or do you see now you're here that this is the continual path for you?
So I've thought about this and I've thought, okay, if if a media company were to come to me and they were to say, Anna, we can give you a job where you can work from home, you can write about whatever you want, and you can have a podcast, and you can experiment with different things and projects as and when you want, then yeah, I would take that job. I already have that job. So I don't know. I never say never. I have, touch wood, I have a very long career still left ahead of me. And who knows, maybe. And this is what I talk about in the book, that my circumstances might change. I might need to go into full-time employment. Who knows what, you know, it might be even harder than it already is to be self-employed, and it might just no longer work for me. But right now, the point that I'm at in my career, I can't think of a job that I would want more than the one that I already have, even with all of the difficulties that comes with freelancing. And I think this is kind of a key point, and this is why I talked about this in the book, is that it's almost impossible to compare self-employment to in-house work. It's they're apples and oranges. It's a different way of working. It's a different way of thinking. And I'm not sure. And I know that I'm built to work like this. So I think I would really struggle to go back into a job. But yeah, like I said, who knows? And that's why I was, you know, and so much of, again, what I'm trying to do in the book is, it's all about permission. You know, so many of us just feel like we don't have the permission to do things because we've been told we should do this, we should do that. This is what success looks like. There's a narrow definition of it, and it's all about your job title and your salary. And I just don't believe any of that. I think that we're all supposed to define success on our own terms. And what may work for me is not necessarily going to work for somebody else. And it's about allowing yourself just to think through what actually makes sense for you and to make things work for you. I can't see myself in an office. I can't see myself being managed. So
well, obviously it's something that's been, you know, you've been thought about for a while, because up until that day where you were made redundant in 2017, you'd already written a notebook about freelancing before that, which you referred to, which makes me want to ask, given that you're nearly 4 years into this journey, would you say that you do at this moment have a greater, to quote your words, a greater sense of self-worth from doing something completely independent?
Yes, 100%. So So to kind of explain that, and I talk about this in the book, I stumbled across this notebook that I had written the year prior to me actually going freelance. And I'd made a list of all the things I hoped to achieve from going freelance. And I also had all sorts of other pages about my plans and whatever, and how much money I needed to save before taking the leap. And I stumbled across it when I was writing the book, and I got quite emotional reading it, because I thought, oh wow, past me, I'm so proud of myself. It has really lived up to my expectations. And I think I remember writing all those things out and thinking, there is no way that I can, that these things are going to pan out this way. I'm not, you know, if I can hit a couple of these points, great. But to kind of think that I can actually achieve all of those things. And most of them were about how I felt about my work and how I felt about myself. They weren't about, you know, writing for particular publications or hitting particular career milestones or earning a certain amount of money. It was more about my own relationship to my work. And I guess kind of like my identity in that respect as well. But I think that is something that I do think is really important. And I try to make really clear that, yes, I essentially very quickly made a decision to go freelance. I got made redundant on a Friday and I started freelancing on the Monday. But the seeds had been planted a long time before that. And it was in the back of my mind for quite a long time.
There is a challenge about the image of freelancing. When you went freelance and decided to make that decision, do you feel that you were taken as seriously as a well-respected journalist working for leading media outlets? Had your stock changed in that area in hindsight, or do you feel you've almost had to reinvent yourself as that, you know, incredibly accredited journalist that you'd already had built?
That's a really good question. Honestly,
but the worst worded question.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. So there's a couple of things. So first of all, I was doing something very niche when I worked in-house. I was writing about dance, like nightlife culture and dance music, which when you have that as your job, being super niche like that is amazing. I got to do really, really good work, fun work. Trying to do that as a freelancer is really hard because there are, well, first of all, the reason I was made redundant is because that publication, that vertical got shut down. So there's one kind of avenue for where you can even pitch that work to is gone. And there aren't that many other places that takes, you know, and this is true of any sort of super, super niche work, particularly within journalism. It's very hard to make that your full-time gig if you go too niche, basically. So I had to kind of shift what I was interested in, what I wanted to cover. However, for me, I have always shifted what I've written about because that's one of the reasons I love journalism. It's one of the reasons I am a journalist, because you get to change your specialism as and when you want to. So that was what I was comfortable with. Honestly, I think the fact that I had worked at The Guardian for such a long time really, really helped with the kind of the credibility and the kind of like credentials. Freelancing is very common in journalism. So I don't think there isn't really an sort of like an us and them with freelancers in journalism. There's an us and them with people who with journalists and like bloggers or content creators. And to a large extent, of course, freelancers are treated very poorly in the media industry, but that is not necessarily because it's more because if you're in-house, you have no idea what it's like to be freelance. And it's a clunky industry with so many other problems. That's kind of where that has come from. But it's not a case that, if you're freelance, you're not considered to be as prestigious. It's more about your bylines. So if you're a freelance journalist who has got bylines at prestigious organizations, then you are kind of considered to be in the same esteem as someone who works in-house at any of those publications. But it's a really good question. And I think it's something that it can be quite tricky to, in certain industries, to kind of make the decision to go freelance, because I think there is always this historic thing. Definitely, you know, when I was at university, no one talked about self-employment, and the idea was, oh, if you can't get your freelance because you can't get a quote-unquote real job, and that may have been the case in journalism, but it's not really now. I think the industry has opened its eyes up to the fact that it's more of a case of when rather than if you will experience a redundancy or have to do a stint of freelancing, because there just aren't enough jobs and the industry is just not secure enough for you to be able to kind of stay in one place for, you know, there's definitely for a job for life, like absolutely just does not exist in journalism.
But I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I mean, you don't paint the rosiest picture of freelancing throughout a lot of this book. In some cases, it could be translated as almost putting people off. I think it just gets, obviously, you're just getting people to make sure they've thought about these areas. But what would you say you've learned most about yourself since you started going freelancing?
I've learned that I really, really need variety to thrive, and that I need to switch things up on a regular basis, be that project or be that kind of where I'm physically sat at my desk, you know, where I'm physically doing my work throughout the day, that I just need to be switching things up. And that's not actually a problem with me. It's not that I can't sit still. It's just that is how I am. And when I lean into that, that's when I'm my most creative. So being able to switch between different types of projects, changing my focus, doing all of that stuff is something that is how I grow, and that is how I develop, and that's where some of my best work comes from. Whereas I think in the past I used to think, oh, why do I get so bored so quickly? Or why do I find it so hard to sit at a desk all day? All of those things, I think, really... It just changed my mindset altogether. And I think also there's just a bigger point here about that there is no one way to work. There is no one right way to work. And I think there is this attitude that, you know, like working is just good. It's inherently good to be working, and we should get we should just be in a job and we should just be working and be grateful for that. When actually work can look like so many different things to so many different people. And there is no, it's not, and that's part of, you know, it's interesting that you say kind of that I don't paint the rosiest picture of freelancing, because I do not believe, and I think it's a mistake for people to think that freelancing is some kind of solution to other work-based problems. And when people come to me and they ask, should I go freelance? I ask them, but are you being pulled towards freelancing, or are you being pushed away from your job? Are you, do you just need a different job? And it's just that there's so much, I've just learned so much about work as a whole and our identities to work. And I've also kind of had some quite difficult realizations that maybe I don't have the healthiest relationship to work, that I can very easily just keep working and working and working and sort of not kind of get that balance right at all. And a large part of that is to do with, you know, as a journalists are the types of, are sort of that category of worker who they really tie their identity to what they do. And it used to be very important to me. Like I used to be really, you know, it used to be very important to me that I go around saying like, I'm a journalist and I work for The Guardian. Like that signaled something. I don't know what I thought it signaled, but it's been quite an sort of an undoing process. Just trying to have a healthier relationship with my work and kind of the role that work plays in my overall identity.
We're a kindred spirit in a few areas, most notably networking and co-working. You stopped very short at mentioning specific networking groups, but you have a very open way of how networking should be and less transactional. But I want to talk about co-working first of all, because you know, we don't truly know what this world is going to look like when we come out of it, and it'll be a hybrid of office work and home work. How important do you think and feel co-working can play a part in helping freelancers to grow, and actually play a part in the UK economy to grow when we're out the other side of this?
I think if done right, it can play a huge role. But effective co-working, actually, for freelancers especially, it means not just having a desk next to a stranger. It means actually facilitating some kind of collaboration and actually kind of having community and addressing the issues that have led freelancers to come and seek those kinds of spaces in the first place. Because a lot of freelancers, they don't really want to be completely alone and they don't really enjoy working from home for long stretches of time. But simply hot desking and just being able to take your laptop into a space where there are other freelancers sat in the desk next to you, that might not necessarily address the issues. And for people who are, I don't know, introverted maybe like I am, or shy, I mean, it's not the easiest thing just to strike up conversation with strangers. It's hard enough striking up conversations with coworkers when you work in a big office and there are other people there. So I think there needs to be some steps forward to create specific freelance co-working spaces, because that's the other thing, is that co-working spaces, they have historically been designed and they've emerged out of the tech space and out of the startup space, and they are more places to kind of incubate startup ideas and to have small offices or sort of roving entrepreneurs. But I think they need to be reimagined to actually encourage freelancers in there freelancers to actually be able to network with each other. Because I think I looked into this was pre-pandemic, but the stats for actual individual freelancers using co-working spaces are not actually that high as a kind of sort of, you know, as a percentage of who is using co-working spaces. I think there could be some, you know, much more interesting types of spaces that emerge. I used to co-work, and I hope to return to it, in informal groups going to freelance-friendly coffee shops. So I have other freelancers that I connect with I've made these connections in the kind of freelance, since being freelance. These are not friends of mine who happen to be freelance. These are people that I have connected with through various networks. And we meet up and we go to a coffee shop that we know is going to just let us have our laptops out. And we chat, and we actually don't get much work done. We just bounce ideas off of each other. We collaborate, we share contact information, we share salary, you know, we share rates and that kind of thing. And I think that's really where the magic happens. And that is so much more valuable. If there are spaces that can facilitate that kind of thing, great. But I think just kind of, you know, freelancers rocking up to WeWork or whatever is not, it's not a whole lot different to just sitting in a coffee shop.
No, I'm happy to remove the idea of WeWork from the true notion of what co-working is about anyway. But there's an element of that which I think is the greatest challenge, because I talked about freelance having an image problem, co-working does too. Because I agree with you, and more specifically in London, I love the city, by the way, I grew up, this isn't an anti-London thing then, but in especially around the Old Street area, there are co-working spaces who openly love to have freelancers work there, but I'm not entirely sure they really care whether they're freelancers or not, because they don't facilitate those spaces. So try and paint a picture for us. Your group that meet in the coffee shop, what does a co-working space have to do, specifically have to do, to actually get your group to be in their co-working space? Because I think, because I'm so passionate, I knocked the microphone off my desk. I think the other businesses who are there too would benefit from freelancers being in that space as well. So, and I think that co-working can help reignite the high street if we start opening spaces from converted shops or offices that are no longer in use. So how can we get these two to work together?
Well, so, I mean, obviously, the first is just to be able to have space where you can physically sit and have your laptop and there are charging points. So actually having the infrastructure there. And then also, you know, there's this idea that freelancers are really stingy and they don't want to buy coffees. Well, they do, but obviously they can't, they don't want to buy 17 coffees in a day. So there needs to be some kind of compromise where there's an acceptable amount of food being bought or drinks being bought to sort of accommodate for it, or some other system. There's actually there's a really interesting company called And Co who do sort of, they go into existing cafes or pubs, which are kind of dormant in the daytime, and they provide the Wi-Fi. You pay a membership fee to them, a really low one compared to what you would pay at a sort of traditional co-working space. And they are facilitating also meetups, and they're trying to get the different people to talk with each other. And they're trying to actually facilitate that community aspect to it as well, which is another part of it, is that it would be great to see businesses also, you know, maybe once a month there is a Friday, or every Friday or whatever, there's a after works drinks thing where maybe the space provides the first drink and then, you know, it's up to you to kind of pay for the rest, but where you're facilitating these connections between the freelancers and actually creating more of a hub rather than just a space to do your work as a solo individual. Because it's about those just being able to chat to each other. Because when I go to there are a couple of different outposts, but it's called Grind, and it is in London. Also, I've since moved out of London, so we'll see kind of how that all pans out. But anyway, they're just comfortable with people coming in, and they're not going to sort of push you out. And I've sat there all day with my three other freelance pals, and we've just had a table and we've been able to talk and order a few coffees, but not be too pressurized. And it's basically, it's almost more like a space where, although at least the way we're using it, it's almost kind of like a meeting space. I'm not going in there every day. So that would obviously look different, and you would need sort of some, you know, you'd need slightly different setup. But it's about being able to be a productive environment where people can actually get work done, but also encourage and facilitate those connections between people who may, you know, between strangers, essentially.
I mean, I think partly what you answered there is even in its simplest form, a lot of freelancers don't decide until the way they wake up whether they want to work from a co-working space or not. And co-working spaces don't facilitate that in quite the same way. I think I agree with you. I think the AndCo model is a really interesting one to see how that goes. Now, back to networking. What was your view of networking before you went freelance? And then how has that changed? Or what was that first networking event like when you did start to work for yourself?
I felt like networking was one of those things I had to do to get ahead on on my career ladder. And I didn't really understand exactly what that meant or how it looked, but it just, to my mind, I thought of networking and I just thought of having to go into those stuffy conference rooms with a warm white wine and a name tag and awkwardly go and try to talk to people. And I really hated it. However, I was taught, I did a master's in journalism and I was taught, this was a very important lesson and one I'm glad that I did learn at the stage I learned it, that it is just as important to network horizontally as it is vertically. So they said to us, look around, especially for something, especially in industries like journalism, where the person sitting next to you will become an editor very quickly because there are only really two jobs in journalism, the reporters and the editors. So the you could end up being an editor quite quickly. So they told us to look around the room and remember that it's not just about networking with the people that you think are going to be able to get you a job. It's about being kind to your peers because they also can really help you. And that is such a valuable lesson because honestly, the people who've helped me the most in my career are the people who are my peers and who are at the same level as me, but they just have someone in their network who can help me with something or can help me get a job or get a freelance gig or whatever it might be. Those have been the most valuable connections. But what happened when I started, when I went freelance, this was obviously in back when you still could go and socialize, but networking also then became a thing that I sort of wanted to do because even though I'm introverted, I found that, and I prefer to work at home and I'm very happy working alone and I'm quite easy. I can motivate myself very easily. I'm still a sociable person. I still enjoy and want to meet people and want to talk to people. And networking actually became kind of this thing that the stakes were so much lower and it became more just about meeting people who got it, who kind of, where you could talk to them about the challenges of being freelance and you could meet really interesting people. And I have made such good friends through being freelance basically, and I enjoyed going to those sorts of events. I also hosted a few of them as well myself, and I was just, it's just a such a different dynamic where you're in a room full of people and you there that kind of, in the old way I used to network, it's just like everyone so clearly had an agenda and they were making such clear beelines for the right people to talk to. And then I would go to these networking events as a freelancer and people just wanted just to, they didn't really care who you were. There was no agenda. It was just, I just want to talk to someone else because I've been at home all day. I'm driving myself crazy. And I just want to find people that can talk about this and who understand what it's like to work for yourself and the kind of like specific challenges of that, of doing that. And it's just, it's almost kind of, I don't even really think of it as networking anymore. It's just, it's making friends and helping one another. So which has been such a nice transition. And it's just that to me has just been, that's also one of the kind of like the real great things I found about this way of working.
But I'm going to play devil's advocate here because there will be those who are members of the transactional networking. You know, the ones they start in the middle of the night, who say, well, hang on, you can make friends. That's what social media is about. But networking is about doing business. Otherwise, what's the point?
Well, I just fundamentally think networking is about helping other people, and that I just don't see, I've just never operated in a transactional and strategic way when it comes to making connections with people. I just want to talk to people who are interested in the same things I am, can have good conversation, and those have been where those have led to some of my kind of best business deals, for want you're going to kind of like to put it back into those kind of terms. For me, it has never worked for me to go and be incredibly strategic and very transactional and treat networking in that way. It may very well work for others, but again, it kind of comes back to what I was saying about how you want to work. I am very comfortable blending my business and personal lives. I work with friends all the time. I have no problem doing that. And it's more important to me to work with people that I who I respect and I enjoy working with them than just to kind of make just sort of like very cold, unattached business deals.
Before anyone emails me, by the way, I don't believe that. I was honestly playing devil's advocate. There's two chapters in here which I particularly enjoyed. One of those is about looking after yourself. And the other one is the first aid for freelancer, which again, I think is the common thing where people don't talk about it enough in advance to prepare you for when things just don't go according to plan. Take the last year, take any other instance that could affect that. But the looking after yourself bit, how you're very open about your own burnout experience and, you know, wanting to get signed off sick so you could still get your weekly paycheck. But obviously that wasn't there for you. Did you question during that burnout too much about whether freelancing was the right path for you at all? And how have you changed the way you look after yourself since then as opposed to before?
Yeah, that's a really good and important question. So there would have definitely been points of the pandemic where I've never questioned like, oh, I've taken the wrong path and this isn't for me. It's been more of a, I wish I just worked for someone else and they could just tell me what to do, or, you know, I could just be, you know, take some actual paid sick leave right now. But in that kind of, you know, we always, not to mention when you're feeling low, you want to kind of go into a sort of a negative headspace anyway. So it was never sort of like, oh God, I've made a massive mistake and I wish I hadn't gone down this path, because no one's had it easy. It's not people who are on furlough have not had it easy. People who've lost their job, like no one has had it easy. So it was more, I got myself into kind of a negative headspace. But I think it's important to talk about those things regardless, because, you know, even as someone like me who's got a book out about freelancing and I'm supposed to be this massive advocate for how brilliant freelancing is, I think it's really important for me to be honest and say there are some days where I do kind of wish I didn't have to get up and do everything that comes with being freelance, and I kind of wish I just had someone else telling me what to do and that I could just not have to deal with all of these stresses. But I have made some, I think I've made some quite significant changes which I think have really helped. So I used to pretty much get up and just start working, and have always been more productive in the morning. So just really wanted to kind of crack on with work. Now I'm a big believer in if something is a priority, it means you do it first. So right now, mental health and looking after myself is a priority. So that means I have to do that first. So I have actually shifted my work to start a lot later. So kind of like 10 or 11. And I prioritize going on a big walk with the dog, doing yoga, having a really good breakfast, reading, because I do the yoga, I don't really do the meditation, but kind of like one or the other, doing all of those things that we all know are good for us. And we all say we don't have time to do. I really lean into the fact that I am the master of my own schedule. So if this is the priority right now, that has to go at the beginning of the day and has to go at the very top of the list above everything else. And what I found is that has really helped, has put me in a much better place to kind of like get on with my work and actually kind of do it. And I've just put much firmer boundaries around my work. So I would kind of work into the evenings a bit, but now there is a hard cutoff around 5 or 6. I've been using so many apps to help me block access to my emails when I shouldn't be in them, block social media, do all of that stuff. Kind of like, there are all these brilliant tools out there that you can, you know, if you're struggling to stop scrolling, if you know that scrolling on Twitter and Instagram is making you miserable, but you're struggling to stop, get a tool to physically stop you. It can either be the inbuilt tools in the apps, or I've downloaded Freedom, which like blocks you and logs you out of all of these social media platforms. So those are some of the things that I've done, and also just being a lot firmer about what I say yes to, what I agree to do. I'm trying to also be, obviously right now with the book and everything, it's a different time for me at the moment, but I am trying to be very mindful about how many calls am I doing, how many Zoom calls am I doing, all of these kinds of things. I'm also kind of thinking about some of the things that I'm taking steps to do is trying to notice, you know, I often get approached and asked for advice or to, you know, have my brains picked, all of these kinds of things. And when it is someone who really does need that help and they've asked very thoughtfully, and it's just, you know, it's either a entry-level freelancer or a student or someone like that, people who I do really want to help, I want to make sure that I either do have space to help those people, so that means saying no to people who basically could have Googled the problem, but then also trying to kind of create like a frequently asked questions page on my website, so that at least I can collate other resources and point people to this stuff so that they can get their question asked, but it's not actually kind of taking up that much of my time. So yeah, it's all these kind of things, but I think very much one thing I did already know this, but one thing that has been really hammered home to me in the last year is all of this stuff is a process, and different things are going to work for you at different points. You know, the schedule that I was using pre-pandemic doesn't work for me anymore. The schedule I used at the beginning of the pandemic isn't working. It's always about making sure that you're kind of listening to what you need and changing things up as and when you need them. So that's another really big lesson about not being so rigid as well.
Does that mean that there's going to be future editions of the book coming out, because your process will change, there'll be things you've written about insurances, taxation, etc. is going to change? Is this a, you know, are there going to be annual editions?
So it will be updated, because obviously, yeah, there's a lot about tax in there, and you know, the different kind of like tax bans and allowances and all of that kind of stuff. So that will get updated as and when is needed. In terms of if things change, kind of, I mean, one thing I do say in the book is the importance of figuring out. I share what I do, but I also emphasize how important it is to figure stuff out for what works for you. I'm sure, you know, there may very well be that I learn more things and discover more things, and maybe there needs to be another chapter. But that's a question I'll have to ask my publisher.
It seems odd to ask that question when this has only just come out. You do talk a lot about self-employment rights. So what can the government do more to help freelancers? And then I'll ask in a moment, what would you say to freelancers who are experiencing, of which I hope we see the end of those challenges, but we don't seem to be anywhere near that. What would you say to freelancers about being able to help themselves in this area?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked this together, because this is the thing, is that there's no sugarcoating the fact that the state of the kind of the employment rights for freelancers are quite dire. But that does not mean that there aren't things that individual freelancers can do to help themselves in the interim. So let's take the kind of like the government stuff to begin with. I don't even want to open the can of worms about IR35. That's its whole mess that I'm going to shelve for now, but that needs to be addressed as part of a larger look at the whole tax system and the kind of the gap between your tax status and your employment status, and how you can be set up from a tax point of view in a couple of different ways, and how it affects your employment rights or your lack thereof. But that's a whole other thing, and that's to my mind the solution is a major tax reform that will take years and to be rolled out in various and kind of like various increments. A really big thing that needs to be addressed is late payments and the legislation around late payments. So there is a piece of legislation that protects freelancers against late payments. The legislation is fine. It's just not really enforced, because there aren't really major penalties. And of the way that the power balance between the freelancer and the company is such that a lot of freelancers either don't know that this legislation exists, or they don't know how to enforce it or to even exercise their rights. And they might even quote this legislation at a company, but not much happens. So enforcing the legislation around late payments is a major area. I mean, a really obvious solution is to give the Small Business Commissioner more power to actually do something and to expand that office's remit. So that's one area. I think also some kind of mandatory reporting around, in the same way that we have gender pay gap reporting, some kind of mandatory reporting around, you know, how, you know, include freelancers in that, and how freelancers are getting paid and the rates of pay and that all of that kind of stuff as well. So,
but isn't there I'm really sorry to interrupt. I vow never to do it, but sometimes, because the Small Business Commissioner is a prime example of someone whose remit is to deal with businesses of various sizes. Different governmental departments define a small business in a different way based on the amount of, I mean, Small Business Saturdays for anyone who turns over up to £10 million. And freelancers are often being bundled together with contractors and gig economy workers as well. And doesn't that fuel the issue itself, that there isn't seen as a difference between, and I'm not saying that there's a them and us between freelancers and everyone else, but that in itself is a big fueler, a driver of the problem.
100%, but that kind of gets at, I said it very flippantly, but that is part of this tax and employment status issue as well, because freelancer means nothing in terms, as far as HMRC is concerned, and as far as employment status is concerned, freelancer is not a legal term. It doesn't mean anything. It's a cultural term that we use and we understand what it means, but it doesn't have any kind of legal definition. So that is kind of part of the issue with, we need to address what's happening with how the tax system and employment rights relate to each other, and what your different tax status means in relation to your employment rights. And the fact that, you know, you can have a limited company director and a sole trader who are essentially doing pretty much the same thing, and yet they are taxed differently, they are treated differently. A great example is what's happening now with the access to support in the pandemic, if you compare a sole trader and a limited company director. So that kind of gets at this issue of, you know, do we need to create a new category of worker, sort of in a more legal sense, and that be freelancers? Like that is part of a much bigger issue. And so it is very much papering over the cracks, and it's very much a band-aid solution to get the Small Business Commissioner to look at that, because this is what that office is already doing. But the big problem with the Small Business Commissioner office is that at the moment they only deal with complaints made against large companies. So you as a small business, and you've been owed an invoice, you can only go to the Small Business Commissioner if that invoice is due from a large organization. So if you're owed from a fellow small business, they can't help you. So that's, you know, that's also part of the problem. Fundamentally, there needs to be a greater understanding on the part of the government as to what the self-employed sector actually looks like, because it is a very varied sector that includes freelance journalists, gig economy workers, contractors. It's such a diverse group of people. And I think what we have seen with the failings of SICE, the Self-Employed Income Support Scheme, is just a reflection of how poorly understood this sector is. And some really big lessons to be learned is addressing that and looking at why that happened and why that is, because it's a terribly painful example of just, it's a reflection of how poorly understood the whole self-employed sector is. And even the idea of kind of a self-employed sector is a bit of a, it's almost like a contradiction in terms. So.
No, absolutely. And it's, SICE as well. You only have to look at the excluded UK Facebook group to read so many of the desperate stories that have come out of those who, well, have been excluded. It's the Freelance Heroes podcast, so I can't not ask this question. You make a reference to the community. Well, of course, you list Freelance Heroes in there as well as some other great communities too. So how important has a community been for you?
Transformative, I think. Like I said, I always was one of those people who I was very happy to get on with, you know, to kind of like have pals at work and sort of have friends at work. But my friends were my friends who were outside of work. And I very much tried to keep my world separate. But now I've made such brilliant friends through what I do, and there is such a kind of blending of my worlds. And I don't think I wouldn't have been able to do something like write a book or start a podcast or just take, you know, what to me feel like massive risks in my career, but just, you know, just trying to like push myself out of my comfort zone, had I not had places to go to ask for support, or just to kind of like just either ask very practical questions about how do I actually do this, but then also just have someone else be that soundboard for an idea, someone to say like, this is a really good thing to do. Yes, you should, your you're well within your rights to challenge that client on this thing, or you should charge this, or whatever it might be. That has all been down to community and just finding those spaces. And again, it's very much about, you know, of course we can talk to other people in our lives and our friends and our family, but it's about finding those people who just really get it and who can kind of like nerd out with you and just like talk about, this is what it is. This is the reality of working for yourself, and just kind of like feel supported and feel understood. So community just played such a big role in everything that I've done. And one of the things I'm really looking forward to when the world opens up again is to actually be able to do these things in person. I think digital spaces are brilliant and I will always be using digital spaces to a large extent, but I really can't wait to kind of be in a pub or be in a badly lit conference room with some warm wine and just chatting with some other freelancers.
I totally agree. Just one last question about the community. When you started freelancing yourself, how easy did you find asking for help?
That is a great question. I think fairly easy. I think I found it easy to kind of find, you know, maybe a Facebook group or something and post a question. I think I found it a bit harder to actually make those connections because, you know, again, because you can be very transactional in digital spaces. You can just go in, you can post a question, you can just extract what you need and you can leave. I think I found it a bit harder to find spaces with kind of like my quote unquote people in them and places where I actually was making friends and real connections. I think that took a while and it took me some time to kind of find those places. But well, then once I did, it all became a lot easier. But I'm also someone who I don't find it the easiest to ask for help. It's definitely been something that I've, I think actually being freelance has really kind of helped me do that and helped me realize that, you know, you cannot do everything completely alone and you really do need to get some external input every now and then. And actually being freelance has really, it's been a really good, painful, but good growth on my part to kind of like push myself to ask for help. Because that's the other thing is that, you know, the hardest thing is to actually just open your mouth and ask. People aren't just going to offer. Well, first of all, people don't know what you need, so they're not just going to randomly offer you things. But just opening your mouth or, you know, typing at the keyboard can feel like the hardest thing. But I've just not had any bad experiences doing so. I have just found, and I'm in various communities here and there, and I've just not had any bad experiences doing so. I think on the whole, just freelancers are very, very kind and compassionate people who want to help their fellow freelancer. So I've never had anyone not help me, basically.
Firstly, if anyone does need help, not only should they ask for it, but they should also buy You're the Business, How to Build a Successful Career When You Strike Out Alone, published by Penguin at $14.99, available either tomorrow or, for most of you listening to this, right now. So I really wish you every luck with this book. It's a great, great book. And I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you. I tend not to talk to authors of books I don't like. They find it impolite. But it is a phenomenal book. It's a mixture between encyclopedic knowledge of the things you should do, but in an empathetic fashion. But your story too is a really wonderful one to read. I do hope that it achieves everything you hope to achieve and more.
Thank you so much. It's been really, really great to chat. So I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Go buy the book now. I'll put the link in the show notes. But Anna Cadrea Rado, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks again to Anna there. As I say, you can buy the book, listen to a podcast, sign up to her newsletter, and so much more as well. Join me again next week for another edition of the Freelance Heroes podcast. And also go to the Freelance Heroes website now, where you can find out details about the forthcoming Freelance Heroes Day. More about that next week. Until then, thanks very much for listening. Have a great week. Bye for now.